From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is U.S. Farm Report.
Welcome to U.S. Farm Report this weekend. I'm Tyne Morgan, and here's what's in store over the next 60 minutes. Debate over whether the record purchases from China will actually ship. That's as President Biden has his first conversation with China's President Xi Jinping. A brighter outlook for cattle prices this year.
You know, February's a good beef month.
But how added feed costs could eat into outlooks for the new year. We'll introduce you to a Kansas farmer who found his golden opportunity.
And so we actually have some of the farm ground that was given to our family through the Homestead Act.
And that's why he's top producer's Horizon Award winner this year. And in John's world.
So how about that weather?
Now for the news, while the February USDA WASDE report typically isn't a big deal, the report did not make dramatic changes, and it seemed to be a market mover, sending markets on a roller coaster ride this week. Soybeans topping $14 one day, dropping the next, and corn inching closer to $5 before dropping back. Traders were surprised by some of the numbers USDA released Tuesday. USDA put corn ending stocks at 1.5 billion bushels, down 50 million from January, but that's not as low as the trade expected. Corn exports were increased 50 million bushels to reflect those historic buys recently by China. Soybeans, though, they were closer at 120 million bushels, with exports raised 20 million to reflect record marketing year exports through January, as well as a slow start to Brazil's export season because of harvest delays. Now, if realized, soybean ending stocks would be down 77% from the last marketing year and the lowest since 2013. Wheat was basically unchanged. And checking world ending stocks numbers, the corn number much higher than trade was expecting at more than 286 million metric tons. China's corn imports now pegged at 24 million metric tons. That's up from 17.5 million metric tons. While the trade expected the soybean numbers, wheat actually came in lower. But take a look at this. This is just how much U.S. ag product is going overseas. John Newton of the American Farm Bureau Federation creating this graphic. It shows for the calendar year 2020, U.S. ag exports totaled $161 billion. That's up 4% year to date. And you can see who was the biggest customer. China, with sales to the country up 75% from 2019. In December alone, U.S. ag exports set a record totaling almost $16 billion. The prior record was $15.8 billion. John Newton will join us for our marketing roundtables later in the show. And President Biden and Chinese leader Xi Jinping talked to each other over the phone this week for the first time since Mr. Biden took office. Their talk included discussions on human rights, trade, climate change, and nuclear proliferation. A White House statement said Mr. Biden raised his fundamental concerns about Beijing's coercive and unfair economic practices, as well as human rights issues, preserving a free and open Indo-Pacific region. The leaders also discussed cooperation on fighting COVID-19 and other issues. President Biden saying in a tweet, quote, "I told him I will work with China when it benefits the American people," end quote. Currently, the U.S. has tariffs on $370 billion worth of Chinese imports, three-quarters of everything China sells to the U.S. Well, while USDA is not counting on government payments in net farm income this year, we've been hearing about the new coronavirus stimulus package now being debated in Congress, and there are several ag-related issues being considered in this draft bill. Among them, a 15% SNAP benefit increase through the end of September, $37 million to the Commodity Supplemental Food Program, $500 million in Community Facility Program funds to help rural hospitals, and $3.6 billion for the Secretary of Ag to continue to help the food and ag sector supply chains. Now, that includes buying commodities such as fresh produce and dairy. Also part of the legislation, $5 billion to farmers of color. The Emergency Relief for Farmers of Color Act would provide $4 billion in direct relief payments to Black, Indigenous, and Hispanic farmers to help them pay off outstanding USDA farm loan debts and related taxes. It was introduced by a group of Democratic senators. Under the plan, a farmer who qualifies as socially disadvantaged could get a payment worth 120% of the amount they owe on a USDA direct or guaranteed loan. Now, the additional 20% is intended to cover the taxes the farmers would owe on the debt relief payment. Republican Representative Austin Scott of Georgia saying the USDA has already paid out more than $2 billion in settlements. That's for discrimination against Black farmers. But USDA still waiting on an ag secretary. Several of President Biden's cabinet picks are still waiting for confirmation. That includes Tom Vilsack, Biden's pick to lead USDA, and Michael Regan, Biden's choice to oversee EPA. Both of those have already won over committee approval, but the full Senate needs to vote in order to finish the process, and that hasn't happened yet. And Biden's nomination for U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai, she hasn't even been scheduled to appear in front of a Senate committee. Political experts say former President Trump's impeachment trial is holding up movement and progress on other issues the Senate needs to address. Well, another news story this week, the coldest temperatures in a decade blasting across the country, really impacting livestock producers and winter wheat. How long will the record cold last? We'll check in with Mike Hoffman next. Meteorologist Mike Hoffman joins us now with weather. Mike, the U.S. seeing the coldest temperatures of the winter, some experiencing the coldest temperatures ever. Livestock producers really feeling it this week. How long does this frigid air last?
Well, good morning to you, Tyne. It sure has been cold, especially the central and northern plains. I do see things letting up a little bit this week, but it's still very cold across the northern tier states, and then letting up a little bit more next week, the last week of February. In the meantime, the root zone has gotten drier lately overall, but I think this week that we may reverse that trend. It's a very active week coming up, as you'll see. Still wet in Arkansas, northern Louisiana, some of the surrounding states, mid-Atlantic, western Great Lakes. Still dry in the northeast, Texas, North Dakota, and most of the west. As far as the drought monitor is concerned, the driest area continues to be the Four Corner region states. And then you go into the northern plains, there's lots of dry conditions in South Texas, lots of dry, but you get to the Mississippi eastward and you're just looking at pockets where it is on the dry side. Let's check out the jet stream this week. The coldest air has been underneath this southern extent of the polar vortex. That's a piece that's going to rotate through the upper Great Lakes as we head through the rest of this weekend and in early in the week. So the cold air is still definitely there. But that moves east. This is still very cold, mind you, but not as cold as we head through Wednesday. But this also shows these storm systems moving from west to east. That will continue to move eastward, and yet another one comes in as we head through next weekend. Notice, though, overall, it's more zonal up along the Canadian border. That means the coldest air retreats into central and northern Canada as we head into the following week. Let's go day by day. Again, a very active week. Storm system moving through the southern plains, southern Mississippi Valley. Boy, lots of snow with this one. Rain to the south of it. Frigid air in the Great Lakes. And the next system coming into the Pacific Northwest. That dives into West Texas by Wednesday. That first one moves off the northeast coast by Wednesday with still some snow back through the Great Lakes. More snow, North Texas, into the Central Plains and back through the Rockies. That system is moving through the eastern Ohio Valley by Friday. That could be a huge snowstorm in places. Rain to the southeast, and yet another storm system coming in to the northern Rockies and the Pacific Northwest. Let's check the 30-day outlook for temperatures. I'm still going below normal for the Mid-Atlantic, Great Lakes, all the northern two-thirds of the plains and the Rockies, above normal down along the Mexican border and for Florida, as well as eastern Canada. Precipitation next 30 days above normal from Louisiana to the northeast, including Florida, northern Rockies, and then below normal the northern Great Lakes northward, and below normal for many parts of the southwestern plains and the southwest. Tyne?
Thanks, Mike. Well, the weather was brutal this week. So were the markets for a couple days. We'll dive into our marketing discussion with Chip Nellinger and John Newton next.
You can attend Commodity Classic without leaving your farm. The 2021 special edition of Commodity Classic delivered digitally March 2nd through 5th. Register at CommodityClassic.com.
Welcome back to U.S. Farm Report this weekend. John Newton and Chip Nellinger joining us for our marketing roundtables. John, I'll start with you. After USDA report the next day, it seemed like the market was disappointed. We saw a double-digit drop, then double-digit gains the next day. I mean, is this volatility expected when we're in a bull market like this?
Well, I think the bulls wanted a little bit more information on Tuesday. They were looking for corn stocks to be lowered more significantly than they were. They were looking for stronger exports. So I think that's why you saw the market pull back. But then you see the export sales report that was released today shows very, very strong export commitments, nearly 4.5 billion bushels combined of corn and soybeans on the book for exports this year, which is a record.
Yeah, and we'll go into that and get into more detail about that coming up in a minute. But Chip, what is the USDA waiting on? Are they waiting on more shipments? Do they want to see other numbers to really believe that these record corn buys that, that China has on the books, that it's actually going to happen?
Well, that's a great question. What are they waiting on? You can make one argument that they're waiting on the shipments of corn to start kind of catching up to the commitments on the sales. You could argue there's still time for some of those exports to be canceled. In fact, yesterday, part of what kind of set off all that selling in the corn market was a cancellation of a corn sale to unknown. But I think that's the question. I think historically, what you learn from the USDA is they're going to slow play this thing going out. They're just not going to cut bean carry out much more than what it already is. We're, you know, basically pipeline levels as it is. And they're going to slow play the corn demand going forward. That's the history of what we've seen in the past from the USDA. And they're going to let price do its own rationing. So I think that's part of the issue. To your point on volatility, I think it's only going to get more extreme from here on out. I think you're going to see swings both higher and lower. That's going to challenge both the bulls and the bears from here on out and chew up a lot of speculators' money. And I think this volatility is only going to get much more extreme from here on out into summer.
Yeah, you know, John, you've done a really nice job of tracking kind of the commitments that we have on the books and shipments for both corn and soybeans. Where do we sit?
Well, on the soybean side, you know, shipments are very strong. You know, we're really close to the WASDE target. I think on the corn side, you know, shipments, as Chip said, I think the market's waiting to see product put on boats and moved, and we haven't really seen that yet for corn. We've still got a lot of weeks left in the marketing year, so, you know, I'm not going to say it's not materializing, but that's what the bears are going to look for, is a slow pace of export commitments as we move through the remainder of the marketing year.
Yeah, and as we do have these impressive commitments, Chip, it seems like we can't have any hiccups when it comes to logistics. And I'm hearing possibly on, you know, on the Missouri River, Mississippi River, low river levels, ice, there could be some issues in getting some of this shipped on the river. You know, is that translating into basis any?
Well, it hasn't yet. Obviously, we've got some bitter cold temperatures here through parts of the Midwest. Hopefully, it looks like the extended forecast that warms up a little bit. So, yeah, we're going to have those challenges. I guess the bright side, the glass half full type point of this is the river system so far, we've got this deep into winter without any problems. So it's allowed us to ship a lot when normally we'd already have some with river problems. Yeah, those logistics are going to be there, you know, but again, I think we've got a tremendous amount of capacity. We're very efficient. It's unfathomable almost how much we've already shipped out corn, beans, wheat down the river and through the other export terminals. We're doing a good job this year. So I think if it is a hiccup, it is going to be temporary. It might affect basis levels locally in some areas with river closures. But in general, as long as we can, you know, start seeing these export shipments on corn increase, and historically you do see that once Brazil takes over and starts being the cheapest low cost provider on beans and the sales move to Brazil, that's when our corn export shipments really pick up. So we need to start seeing that over the next few weeks, or as John mentioned, the bears might get a little more ammunition thinking that a lot of these sales could eventually be canceled or switched to Southern Hemisphere destination.
John, real quick, do you have any concerns of actual shipments happening? I mean, is there any economic incentive for some of these countries to look elsewhere when it comes to things like corn?
Well, I think one of the reasons that corn exports are so strong is obviously China. And when you look at Chinese corn prices, you know, I was with the U.S. Grains Council last week, and they reported that corn prices in China were $3 per bushel higher than U.S. corn landed. There were still incredible margins on hog feeding of corn in China. And again, that's one of the major reasons that we're seeing such large commitments on the corn side. So I think the fundamentals are still there. But again, as you get later in the year, if you start to see any concern that maybe that USDA number that's printed of 2.6 billion bushels may not materialize, as Chip said, that's what the bulls want to, or bears want to see.
Well, the acreage battle this year, it could be intense. And we'll talk about it later on U.S. Farm Report. Well, we talked about the brutal cold on the show this weekend, but John Phibbs has another take on weather this week for John's World.
Well, you know the old saying, nobody talks about the weather, but everybody does something about it. That's my more updated version. Deprived of media oxygen by the pandemic and politics, the weather in 2020, I think, was a hugely overlooked story. For example, 2020 was either tied with 2016 as the warmest year for our planet on record, or just barely number two. It also managed this without an El Nino. It tied 2018 in tropical storms with 103 named storms, an unusual share in the North Atlantic. Remember, we ran out of alphabet and switched to Greek? And the storms are getting stronger. Arctic sea ice also tied 2016 for the lowest coverage in history. The oceans were exceptionally warm, coming in third behind 2016, of course, and 2019. While our attention was being tweeted toward other distractions, another factor that made extreme weather page six news is shown on this chart. I actually think we're getting used to breaking these records. The last 10 hottest years have all been since 2005, and the last seven are the warmest seven recorded. As for wildfires, Colorado suffered its three largest and California five of its sixth largest. And then there was a derecho, of course. In all, there were a record $22 billion disasters compared to an average of seven per year since 1980. And yeah, that's adjusted for inflation. I think this more or less constant stream of extreme weather events has become business as usual, especially for those of us lucky enough to not bear the brunt of them. Climate change is now occurring so rapidly we can see it underway, but it's easier to pretend not to notice than to add one more thing to argue with family about at Thanksgiving. This gaze averting has not stopped us from adapting, however, especially in agriculture, from using cover crops to battle heavier rain erosion to dwarf corn plants for wind resistance to crops moving northward. Farmers are making prudent business decisions without speaking the reason that must not be named. This is a good strategy, I think, because serious benefits will accrue to growers who think ahead, and not broadcasting your reasons might just be a significant advantage to outflank competitors who can't change practices without feeling like they've lost face. We need all the collective brain power working on practical problems the weather trends present, not hours on Twitter nitpicking over 19th century temperature records. Unfortunately, we really have been doing something about the weather, but now we're not talking about it.
Thanks, John. Well, when we come back, we'll check in with Machinery Pete for Tractor Tales this week.
Hey folks, welcome back to Tractor Tales. This week, join me as we head to Iowa to check out a very unique set of Farmall twin tractors from Iowa. All right folks, something totally unique and way cool here. Larry, you have to tell us about your creation. And first of all, what do you call this amazing machine?
Well, I call it the twins, and other people have other names, but to me, it's a pair of twins. People ask sometimes whether it was factory made or something, but I actually put it together. There's been questions of what it was for. And
how did you get the idea to do this?
I knew it could be done, and mechanical ability, I guess. A's and B's are all similar, the bolt pattern on the rear ends, everything is symmetrical, so you can bolt one axle to a transmission, or you can bolt the drop gearbox to both sides of the transmission. There's all kinds of options you could do it. You could actually, probably if you wanted to, just get enough A's and B's, you could just keep going for. I had it all together about 10:30 one evening, and I put a 5-gallon bucket on the seat, and I got things started and was going to try and see what happened. Unbeknownst to me, I had no idea what might happen, and I thought a little bit about sitting on that 5-gallon bucket, and I said, if this thing takes off, I'm going to be on the floor. So the next morning I put the seat on it, and then went through the same ritual and got them running and let the clutch out, and nothing happened. They just sat in one spot and both engines, the differentials were turning inside. It'll run, run either both of them, right or left, either way. You can run them three different ways.
Thanks, Greg. Well, still to come, cattle prices may see brighter days in 2021, but how could higher feed costs eat into the outlook this year? That's our Farm Journal Report. We're focusing on cattle next.
U.S. Farm Report is produced and distributed by Farm Journal Broadcast. Welcome back to U.S. Farm Report. Trusted, timely, tradition.
Well, maybe you have plans to enjoy a nice steak with your loved one this week. That's as the outlook for livestock prices is a bit brighter in 2020, thanks to beefed up demand. There's also hope better prices could be on the horizon even later this year. But climbing feed costs could also eat into that outlook. And that's this week's Farm Journal Report. Challenges in raising cattle are nothing new.
What we ran into in the late spring and summer was extreme heat, drought, and because of our really hard winter, cold, wet winter in 2019, and everybody used up their hay stocks completely, it made people a little bit edgy.
Feed issues that started in 2019, and when the rain started to shut off, the challenges only grew.
And when they didn't get that in the fall, it was almost pushed the panic mode that they just started selling cattle.
The drought picture today tells the story best. Dryness is parked over the Southwest with the most severe level of drought spanning across West Texas and the Four Corners region.
In general, we're down about 1.3% in the total numbers since the peak of cattle numbers in 2019.
Drover's editor Greg Henderson says the U.S. cattle inventory shows a projected slight decline in overall numbers.
The weather will have a large impact. We see in this latest report that Colorado's cow herd is down 14.5% just from last year.
But the latest inventory report didn't indicate major liquidation was taking place in drought-stricken states, a shock to Robo AgriFinance's senior animal protein analyst.
My initial reaction to the report was somewhat disappointing. The fact we did not see the level of liquidation that so many were looking for.
Instead, USDA indicated an increase in beef cow numbers in Kansas, Oklahoma, and even Texas.
Given a lot of the dry weather concerns we had through 2020 on and off, and then the risk we have of the expansion of the drought in the West moving across the central or southern states for 2021, I have a little bit of uneasiness that, okay, that expansion in female numbers may be a bit vulnerable if we do get into real weather complications this summer.
Close still thinks cattle producers are looking at better pricing opportunities in the back half of 2021.
The concern with the increased numbers of cattle on wheat, that might buffer that perspective a little bit. But we're still looking at a tighter availability of replacement cattle. We're still going to look at reduced supplies of cattle in the feed yard for the second half of the year.
As cattle prices trended higher in January, Sterling Profit Tracker's John Nalivka thinks demand could lend a hand to prices sooner.
Everybody always looks for a pullback, but at the same time, I think we've got, February's a good beef month. I think we're headed towards moving into this scenario of higher prices.
Sterling Profit Tracker expects cow-calf returns to beat 2020 and 2019, but falls short of profits producers experienced in 2018. And the feeder cattle forecast is similar.
My forecast for feeder cattle and calves would bring us back to where we were about in 2019 against this, pretty significant drop we saw in 2020.
Improved prices are aiding USDA's February net farm income forecast for this year, but with fewer government payments expected, USDA's first look shows net farm income to drop 8% in 2021.
If you go back and you look at prior years of USDA forecasts, we find about a 13% average too low.
Jackson Takish is the chief economist for Farmer Mac. He says while USDA is using a corn price figure more than a dollar below levels today, the cattle price number is more in line with the prices producers are already seeing.
There is room, but there is potential for upward revisions in the livestock protein sectors, but that's going to require, I think, some changes in the marketplace.
One University of Missouri economist thinks the lower corn price also means USDA may not be figuring in the real impact of higher feed costs.
Not terribly dramatic right now in USDA's figures. One where we think they might be a little bit on the low side, frankly, is on feed, where they have a modest increase in feed costs projected, but given where corn and soybean meal prices are, yeah, I'm a little surprised they're not showing a larger increase than they are.
For Westhoff, profits for cattle producers this year don't just hinge on feed prices, but also the demand picture.
I think on the livestock side, it's going to be primarily what happens on both feed costs and what happens with the general economy.
Domestic demand continues to be strong, with coronavirus aid injecting money into the economy.
The $600 checks that went out in December, that stimulus is clearly being reflected in the market today. The overwhelming expectations of the $1,400 payment that the projected date is early March, that will clearly give us some loft into the spring.
Close says his biggest concern is when that money shuts off.
This is going to stop. And so what kind of shockwaves is it going to take when we're still trying to rebuild the economy?
While some fear the strong domestic demand picture may not last, the latest export numbers show beef exports exploded 8% higher in December to levels not seen in a decade.
But the last quarter of 2020 was very robust. We're starting to see Asia in particular rebound. We think that rebound will continue into 2021.
While Asian markets shine, Hallstrom says the Latin market is making a comeback from COVID-19, all factors that could support export strength this year.
Call it 10% growth is our forecast for 2021 on beef exports, and that would be a new record over 2018.
Close says beefed up exports are something that didn't happen by chance.
The industry, USMEF, NCBA, USDA, everybody has worked on this for years, and we are truly getting to that spot where it is significant to the market going forward.
The prospects for better prices, but concerns over feed costs also on the rise, show there could be both opportunities and challenges for cattle producers in the new year.
Well, we'll dig into livestock prices a little bit more when we come back.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to U.S. Farm Report this weekend. Well, Ag Outlook Forum this week, and we could get our first taste of what USDA is thinking as far as acreage goes. I mean, Chip, when you look at prices today, is there a bigger incentive for farmers to plant corn or soybeans? You know, and you've got sorghum, wheat, and also cotton entering the picture.
Yeah, I think it's shaping up to be a really interesting spring timeframe. I've been a little bit surprised, I guess, and the fact that we've seen a couple private estimates out already and farmers type surveys, and the corn number ended up being a lot higher than what I would have really thought. But to your point, this is going to shape up to be a really interesting spring. On paper, I could argue that beans kind of win. However, you look at the input side on corn, and a lot of farmers were able to book some of their inputs at cheaper cost levels before nitrogen and fertilizer shot through the roof. Cotton, not to be outdone, 3 months ago, a lot of people in the Mid-South were saying, hey, I'm going to plant more beans and less cotton. But the cotton market heard those whispers and has woken up here recently. Cotton straight through the roof. So there's a lot of competition here amongst a lot of different crop mixes, and it's going to be really an interesting spring. It's going to boil down to, on the case of corn, in my opinion, as it always does, Mother Nature. If we get a good early open planting window, I think it favors corn. It always does historically. But, it's going to be interesting because we've got such tight stocks that we need to increase supply and have good yields and good crops. But how that acreage mix is going to pan out is anyone's guess at this point.
Yeah, John, considering how tight that stock situation is, especially in soybeans, how many acres do we really need to get planted this year?
Well, I think one area to look at is, in 2019, we had nearly 20 million acres classified as prevent plant. Last year, we had 10 million acres that qualified for prevent plant. So you could see some of those 10 million acres maybe come back online in corn, in soybeans. Last week, the Cotton Council did come out with their first estimate of cotton acres, actually showing it go down to 11.5 million acres this year. But there is going to be an intense competition for acres. I think the spring crop insurance prices will also give us a good signal on which way acres will ultimately shake out.
Yeah, Chip, I know you're one that says, okay, you've got to factor in crop insurance prices at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. From a new crop perspective, it's critical as far as an individual marketing plan. I've been kind of looking at some numbers here, and obviously we don't know fully what the February average price is going to be yet for corn and beans. But in a lot of cases in corn, we're able to cover some pretty good levels. Now, I think two things. If there's producers out there and they haven't started looking at prices, A, be ready for some sticker shock, because not only are prices well above what we've seen the last few years, but the volatility factors increase, and it's not going to be cheap this year. But as you look at what the revenue guarantees are in the case of corn, and even in some cases beans, you're able to cover the cost of production, maybe even a slight profit. So that's good from the standpoint of being able to be patient through this volatility. If we happen to go lower, always fall back on what your spring revenue guarantee is, and don't make decisions below that until you get closer to pollination and beyond. It allows you to have a little bit of patience to see if those rallies are going to come.
John, switching gears a little bit to livestock. Talk to some analysts after the latest USDA report that said, listen, I expected USDA to show more liquidation than they did. So, seeing these cow numbers that we have on hand right now, how does that set the stage for cattle prices in the months ahead?
These high input costs on corn, soybeans, grain sorghum, that's going to increase their costs. So we need to make sure that, that the fat cattle prices, the lean hog prices, the milk prices are able to keep pace with these higher input costs on the feed side.
Yeah, a factor that wasn't necessarily reflected in that first net farm income forecast from USDA. All right, John, Chip, thank you so much for joining us this weekend. We need to take a quick break, and then we'll have much more right here on U.S. Farm Report. Well, each year during Top Producer Seminar, a young farmer receives the Horizon Award. And this year, a Kansas farmer is receiving the honor. A young farmer who's family and employee focused while planting seeds of growth by always being eager to learn. This week, we introduce you to Matt Splitter of Splitter Farms.
Settled on these central Kansas acres.
We are a fifth generation farm. Our family came to central Kansas by way of a Baptist colony that moved here in 1878.
Is a family whose farm history is rooted deep.
And so we actually have some of the farm ground that was given to our family through the Homestead Act.
Today, Matthew Splitter prides himself on being highly efficient.
We are looking at our costs very, very closely. We are utilizing our labor very efficiently. Instead of one big sprayer, we use two smaller sprayers. That actually lowers our costs, so we are more efficiently doing our applications.
This 35-year-old spread includes wheat, corn, soybeans, and grain sorghum. The farm is 100% no-till, tapping into efficiency with every pass. A steady rotation with a steady plan, but one that was founded following an untraditional path.
I was adopted into this family, and so one of our biggest keys in our operation is to just take what we've been given, the opportunity and the assets, make them better, and then give them to the next generation.
Both of Matt's parents have PhDs. His dad was a corn breeder in Nepal. After he returned to this Kansas land in the late 70s, education was always key. Matt and his wife Jana sowed their first seeds on their farm back in 2011. But just a few years later, commodity prices took a nosedive, and Matt was struggling to figure out what was next.
I remember sitting in my office, and I sold probably half of our wheat for about $2.75. And I just remember having a flood of emotions, knowing that this wasn't sustainable.
That winter, the education ingrained in Matt sent him in search of some educational resources to help, including attending local meetings.
We met a fellow producer by the name of Lee Scheifler and his wife Margaret Scheifler from Sterling. I remember the very first question I asked him, why do you plant your soybeans with an air seeder on 7.5-inch rows? He didn't give me an answer. He said, I'd like to visit with you further.
Set a new plan into motion.
As they were leaving that night, they asked us to take over their farm. And it was such an emotional time for us. Like, holy cow, like, we just won the lottery.
A transition quickly took shape from just over 1,000 acres in 2011 to what it is today. With his wife by his side and daughters Lakin and Landry looking on, Matt and Jana are proving a willingness to learn can grow unexpected opportunity.
So we want them to see hard work and what it takes to have a business and really involve them as a family, just like we do with our employees and their families.
I think there's a clear distinction in between heritage and legacy. You know, heritage is the assets that you can inherit. It's that idea that the ground will be passed on, you know, ownership will be passed on. Legacy, for, in my opinion, is what you did with it.
An eagerness to learn with a willingness to listen is what's helped Matt Splitter find his golden opportunity.
Well, congratulations, Matt. And the Splitters, along with Top Producer of the Year finalists, will be recognized Monday night at 7 p.m. Central on agweb.com.
Top Producer will also name the 2021 Top Producer of the Year. You can watch live Monday and then also join us for the Top Producer Summit virtual event. That's February 23rd through the 25th. From wading through the carbon market to an economic outlook from the Kansas City Fed, we will cover it all. That's February 23rd through the 25th. It also includes a live taping of U.S. Farm Report.
All right, when we come back, John Phipps.
The great startup problem.
Got equipment to sell privately but tired of scams and hassles? Visit MachineRepeat.com and click Sell Mine. MachineRepeat.com, the simple and secure way to buy and sell equipment online.
Well, we're continuing our discussion on a possible recovery from the impact of COVID-19 here in the U.S. John Phipps has more in customer support.
I watched your segment on COVID's impact to the institutional demand for food with great interest. There is a parallel in aviation, the industry I work in. Traffic numbers are off significantly and are showing no signs of recovery yet. Most of the flying is cargo, leisure travel, and the small segment of employees of businesses who must travel. Recovery won't come until discretionary business travel returns. And two key things have to happen for this travel to return. Companies and organizations have to be willing to host meetings, conferences, etc., and borders need to be open. If you assume a vaccine proves in practice to be safe and effective, then only after a couple hundred million people or some other large number are vaccinated will this comfort level return. At this point, a recovery could begin. Aviation has a similar problem of organizing the logistics challenges, such as removing aircraft from storage and ensuring they have crews with up-to-date training. As you say, predicting the timing is key. This is really important to remember, and thank you for the feedback, Bob. Much of agriculture saw little disruption in our schedules and routines, while some sectors, like meatpacking, had serious problems. I've had just enough experiences like industrial processes, nuclear engineering, and worst of all, reviving a dormant grain drying system to shudder at the thought of all the needed startups. Coordinating multiple sequential operations from a dead stop to full flow is one of the hardest evolutions to pull off successfully. It may take several tries, for example. We will find weaknesses in our systems that were not apparent during steady state conditions. Just like how Combine somehow managed to break in the shed over winter, COVID-idle productions and distribution systems will struggle to come up to speed. Key people will be missing, from death, sadly, to those making career changes in order to make a living. Our biggest obstacle could be discovering people have not really been trained to operate and understand, but simply monitor ongoing processes. This calls for patience from everyone in the production chains, customers, suppliers, and even investors. I keep extending my own recovery targets, such as eating out or vacations, as information from hospital caseloads, vaccination rates, and variant strains come in. Over the next several months, we all need to allow wider margins in our schedules and be more willing to cut the people we work with some slack. We are emerging from an unprecedented interruption of our modern economy and society. Expect headaches and failures, and do your best not to be one of the causes.
Well, flower farmers are also feeling the impacts of COVID-19. We'll tell you how
next.
This year, you can attend Commodity Classic without leaving your farm. The 2021 special edition of Commodity Classic delivered digitally March 2nd through 5th. Register at CommodityClassic.com.
Well, in case you didn't know, forgot, whatever your excuse is, Valentine's Day is this weekend, and let this next story remind you that if you haven't got a Valentine's for your loved one, flowers may be in short supply. People may not be able to take their sweethearts on a date as readily this Valentine's Day, but they can still buy flowers, and that has been a boon for California flower growers. Demand for flowers has risen prior to the holiday, and supply, they say, may be limited. Some growers went out of business earlier in the pandemic, and air transportation of imported roses has been disrupted. California actually leads the nation in production of flowers and nursery crops. And with the cancellation of National Farm Machinery Show this year, some of you may be home for Valentine's Day for the first time in years. Well, that's all the time we have for U.S. Farm Report this weekend. Thank you so much for watching. Be sure to join us again next weekend as we work to build on our tradition. Have a great weekend, everyone.
U.S. Farm Report is produced and distributed by Farm Journal Broadcast.